Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut for this July 16th session something or another. We'll figure that out when we get to the end. Your host and program director here, James J. Mailoff, with my partner in art, our head of production, Seth Habacker.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Director's Cut this evening. And we have a local person with us today that I think he knows just about everyone, or everyone knows him.
Everybody knows him.
There's
for sure.
There's a very few people who don't know him. So
yeah,
you've probably met him before.
Yeah, we want to ask the best audience in radio to welcome to the WFHR stage, Mr. David Farnborough. David, good to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Well, good morning, James. Good morning, Seth. It's great to be here.
Appreciate the time from you. David is a Renaissance man. I consider you one. When I first reached out to David about being on the show, you asked a very smart and great question right away. Well, okay, I'd love to do the show, but what are we going to talk about? I can talk about this, this, and this. And I want to talk about all of it. I don't know how I could pick just one, David. Your impact in this community, your writing is amazing, your photography I love. I wouldn't be able to pick one, so we're going to put it all in this 1 hour here. And I want to start off with you telling us a little bit about yourself, your origin story, how you came to be here in the States with us in Wisconsin and all of that.
Right. It's an interesting question. And when people hear my voice, that's one of the first things they say.
It's going to be a little tip off.
Almost every day I get asked this question. You're not from around here, are you? Or do I detect an accent? That's one I hear a lot in gas stations.
Yeah.
No, I'm originally from the UK. I come from London, England. Yeah. And sometimes I say I'm from England and people say, what part? And I say, all of me.
Oh, that's good. And I like that.
And sometimes I then have to explain it and it doesn't seem so funny.
He's a father, everyone. Yep, he can make dad jokes.
I'm allowed to. I'm a father and I'm a stepfather. I've got 5 great children, various ages, from 15 up to 22. And that's all part of my background too. I was originally married to a Wisconsin girl, and we lived in London for a while, and we had one son between us, my son Joseph, who is now 21. Well, we split up, and during the process, Joseph, my son, ended up here, and I came over here to be a father to him. And really, I couldn't have predicted the turn that my life would take. Through my time in the UK, I was working as an attorney. I was a real estate attorney, and I did that for 23 years. Now, I didn't always enjoy it. I was stuck in an office a lot, which is very bad for our health, as you know. And I really wanted to get into something more creative. So I went to college and I did a BA in English literature, first of all. And then having done that, I went back and I did an MA in film and visual media. I really tried to get into media in the UK. I applied for radio, television production jobs. I applied for journalism jobs. I've been writing as an amateur journalist since my teens. I've been paid, actually, for music reviews when I was a teenager. And I hoped to get into that professionally. But it was tough. I couldn't get a foot in the door because they all said, well, you've got to have experience. And even when I had the qualifications, it still wasn't enough. And that's one way in which coming to Wisconsin Rapids has really changed me as a person, because suddenly the opportunities were there. I didn't any longer need to work as a lawyer because I didn't need to earn so much money. And I could go in at entry level into journalism here. And shortly after I arrived, I did some jobs to make ends meet. I worked in McCain's potato factory, and I put potatoes in boxes. And really, that was very useful. It was very educational because I didn't know anything about that sort of life. Yeah. I'd been sitting in a law office for 23 years. And really, it's quite good to see how most people make their living, you know, through hard work. So I did that for a little while. While I was there, I approached the editor of the Voice of Wisconsin Rapids, Jeff Williams, to see if he would want someone to do some writing and photography. Well, they already had a photographer, and so I only did the occasional bit of photography there just when they couldn't get their photographer there. But I did start to write a column for The Voice. I wrote a column called A Different View, which ran for 4 years and 100 issues. And that was really my view of Wisconsin Rapids. And it seemed to take people by surprise that I'd come from a city of 8 million people, and I was coming to a city of 18,500 people. And I thought this was great. They thought, oh, but you must really miss London. Because, you know, well, no, London doesn't have a Macmillan Memorial Library there. London doesn't have a Friends of Rapids Music. You know, and yes, I'm from London, but I wasn't from the middle of London where everything happens. I was, you know, I was born and brought up in the suburbs. I lived in a different suburb. Our library, which served 239,000 people, wasn't nearly as good as Macmillan. And also, we have three local museums here in Rapids. Where I lived, we had one very poorly managed local museum, and that was it. And really, locally, we had very little in the way of community. One thing somebody told me shortly after I moved here was, if you live in Rapids, you can drive your car into the ditch, but four people will stop to help you pull your car out. So that was really the basis of my column. It was really seeing through new eyes things that people sometimes took for granted when they lived here. I also did some other journalism, some reportage, and also some political interviews. I interviewed some candidates, and that was quite enjoyable. And after a little while, I started doing freelance photography and ended up doing that for a number of different organizations locally. I did some for the city of Wisconsin Rapids, some for Wood County, some for the city of Nicoosa, some for the Chamber of Commerce, some for the Convention and Visitors Bureau, some for community theater. And I did some volunteer photography for the theatre and some volunteer photography for the Humane Society. Also private commercial clients. I also at one stage opened a little photography shop on West Grand Avenue where I was selling framed photographs. And I had that for about 6 months. Unfortunately, really, there wasn't the demand for that sort of thing. And I worked out that really the demand was for two things. You can either sell photography on demand, so people have to go online and they select one of your existing photographs and they order prints, or photography to order, where you go and photograph something. So that was a useful experience, though, you know, like all these things. And from there, I also got into writing and directing videos for Hearts Media. And I don't know if you remember, but Hearts Media was a company that was set up within the Chamber of Commerce by Phil Hartley. And what we would do was we would make videos, really commercials, for local businesses and nonprofits, and I did several pieces of work with them that I'm very proud of. Mm-hmm. I wasn't behind the camera. We had a very good videographer, Dan Smith, doing that. Mm. But I would direct and I would write the videos. Not all of them. There was a big team involved with that. Mm-hmm. But my experience or my qualifications and interests in film and video mm-hmm. helped me to do things like prepare camera scripts and know how to do all the preparation that saves you a lot of time on your shooting days.
So I've
just covered about probably 6 years.
I was gonna say that's the Cliff Notes version, everybody. Right. I told you, Renaissance man, I told you. A couple of real quick notes out of this, David. First, thank you for that. I appreciate that walk down memory lane with you and a bit of that origin story. It was really cool to hear. I knew some of that, but I didn't know all of that about you. That was really interesting. I find it very cool that the thing you mentioned about having our museums here. I'm a history nut myself. And for us in the States, it's interesting to hear somebody from, over there in the UK talk about history that way. One of my favorite comedians, Eddie Izzard, a line from him comes to mind of, I'm from England, where the history's from. You guys got castles laying all over the place. Like, that's the way a lot of us Americans kind of picture it and stuff sometimes. And to hear your love of history here and how we appreciate our history here is a unique perspective that I hope gives people an opportunity out there to appreciate what we have and some of that. Another quick note that I'd like to mention, too, is the ahead of the game stuff kind of here. Continuing your education is something that I think a lot of people talk about nowadays much more, in the last 5-10 years. Mm-hmm. You were doing this already. You had degrees and you had plenty to stand on, and you go back to school to go for creative reasons. And I found that very interesting. What made you decide to actually go ahead? We have a lot of thoughts of doing that. What made you actually go forward and I'm going to do this?
Well, it's funny because a lot of the time you commit to things. I mean, I suppose not everyone's the same. But what I find is I commit to something and I think, I'm probably not going to do this. I'm going to fail. And then I think, well, maybe I'll just start. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll do one lesson. I'll go to one lecture and it'll be terrible. And I think, well, actually, that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I'll go to another lecture and I'll keep on paying them, And then I think, really pretty good marks. And then before you know where you are, you've done your first year, and then you think, oh, well, that was all right. I'll sign up for another year. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, you think, oh, I passed. That was good.
Always a plus, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I'm a very curious person. I'm interested in everything. And learning for me isn't something that stops when you're at school. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that we stop doing when we leave school. Most people never pick up a paintbrush after they turn 18. Yeah. And I do. I'm a useless painter. We've got some great artists here. You just have to go to the cultural center and see all the talent that's on display there. I occasionally try and draw and paint. I know I'm not good at it, but I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And that's really what's important. Yeah. You don't have to be good at things to do them. Mm-mm. It's like people who go fishing.
Yeah, yeah. Not everybody's the world's greatest angler, but they still go out there mm-hmm. and fish. You, again, reminded me of another one of my favorites, Miles Davis, who conquered jazz like few who ever have, created several different types, and got to a certain age where he was like, oh, I want to do something different. Picked up a paintbrush, started selling paintings, mm-hmm. started, and Miles would be the first to have told you that he didn't consider himself a great artist, but he loved the freedom of it, the creative, like he felt like a kid again, creatively, that part of his brain to be able to do that. I think that can be said for a lot of us that have that other break in life. So much of your story speaks to me about a similarity for many of us out there where mm-hmm. as children or when we're young, we have this idea of who we want to be when we grow up. And the older we get, the more realizing it's not so much about who we wanted to be, but who we were meant to be and where our path took us. I'm not a big believer in, well, this was always going to happen kind of things. I think the universe puts you where you're meant to be. And for you, for me, for Steph, for all of us, none of us are from here, but here we are. Mm-hmm. And here we are having a great conversation and getting to know each other better and stuff. And none of us are locally from this town. The universe puts you right where you need to be. When it comes to your writing, that's where I'd like to really start with things, David. I love your work. I find it very detailed, and there is an angle on it that I don't necessarily have. Where does the writing process begin for you?
Yeah, it's a question that people often ask proper fictional authors. Where do you get your ideas from? And in a lot of cases, it's staring at a blank sheet in a typewriter until your eyes bleed. So there is an element of that. And sometimes it's when the deadline comes you think, that was the deadline. Yeah. I should have sent this in to the editor 10 minutes ago. Maybe he's gone to bed and he won't look at this until the morning.
Desperation is the mother of invention, right?
So yeah. I'll see what I can do. So sometimes it's like that, but sometimes there's things you've been working on for a while, and there are things that I do which are more organized than that, where over a period of weeks or months, I've been jotting down ideas and I come back to them at a later date. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need a framework to pull them together or a catalyst. I know that when I was writing columns for The Voice, I would try and have a topicality to what I was writing, but it would often pull in concepts that I was thinking about. When I was working in the potato factory, I used to carry a notebook with me, and I'd go to the breaks, and I'd be thinking all the time I was putting potatoes in boxes. I'd be thinking about the next story I was going to write, and I'd go on a break, and I'd take the notebook out, and I'd jot it all down, and then when I got home, I would type it up, and that was how I dealt with that. There was one thing that I meant to mention, which is probably a significant part of my story, which is that I started a local newspaper here. Mm-hmm. And when The Voice closed, they'd been going for 4 years, and I really enjoyed what they brought. We do have the Tribune, and the Tribune has a great and honourable history and some great journalists still writing for them now. But the Tribune started to have more of a regional emphasis, mm-hmm. and this was driven commercially, mm-hmm. and so I thought we needed something local. So I went around and I talked to a lot of local stakeholders, people like the police chief and the sheriff and elected representatives, and said, you know, how do you feel about having a new paper here that's online only? We come out every day, and it's not like the old concept of once a week you get this thing. It's a continuous rolling thing. And they were very supportive of it. And then I met with some partners in Stevens Point who'd been successful with the Stevens Point City Times. Mm. And we joined together to launch the Wisconsin Rapids City Times.
Yeah.
And that lasted. I was the managing editor of that for 6 months, and then I handed it over to someone else. I found it very difficult to get advertising sales. And they changed the model slightly. They went in with the buyer's guide, and now the advertising there is there, and it's a very healthy publication.
Mm-hmm. Great reporting.
And it's nice to have the two newspapers.
Yeah. I think it's a great note, too. Yeah. We don't get the chance to talk about these very often, but whenever I have a chance, you know, I'm friends with and worked with Caitlin over at the Daily Tribune a bit, and I really enjoy her reporting and work.
She's great.
She really is. Yeah. And she's got a real love for this area, for journalism. I have a lot of hope in journalism because of people like her. But to your point, those of us that have been in this area for a while, we know that the Tribune has not done the local reporting and just don't have the sources. No newspapers really do anymore. The New York Times just got rid of their sports department, and I can't even believe I'm saying that out loud. We understand what's happening to our newspaper industry, but that's where locals like yourself, like the team behind the Wisconsin Rapids City Times, doing that kind of reporting, it's so vital. And I normally ask people, especially writers, one of my favorite questions is your influences. But I'm curious, David, do your influences stem mostly from journalists or you know, your traditional writers, your Henry David Thoreau's and that, or is it more journalism that you build, take an influence from?
That's a question I really haven't thought of, because I just saw myself as organizing facts and setting them out in a clear and easy to understand and interesting way. But I suppose I've read a lot of journalism over the years. Most of the journalism I've read is in the field of music, and a lot of writing about television and movies. Surprisingly, for someone who has a degree in English literature, the majority of the books I read are factual. I suppose I read a lot. I used to buy 3 weekly music magazines and 1 monthly, and all that info goes in my head. And I suppose I've picked up some of the writing style.
Yeah, there you go. Very interesting. Cool. What is the latest work that you're working on?
Well, I'm actually working on a few projects at the moment, and one of them I'm not going to talk about because it depends on other people, and they may not want me to speak about it at the moment.
Sure.
I'm also working on on 2 books. The satirist and actor Peter Cook used to say that when people said to him, "I'm writing a book," he'd say, "Oh, really? Neither am I." because so many people say they're writing a book and nothing ever happens. I'm familiar with that. I know how the business works, and I've been working on 2 things. One of them is basically a rewritten version of my columns from The Voice. When I look back over them, I think I did some good work there, but some of it seems very naive. And there's also some factual errors as well. And so I would want to try and correct that. The other thing I'm working on, I've actually written several chapters, but I need to tie it all together, is a book about immigration and the process of immigration. I have read a lot of books which are immigrant narratives, and they work very differently depending on the country you're talking about and the circumstances of the immigration. A lot of people come to a country because they're fleeing some sort of oppression, be it religious or racial or something, or a war. And a lot of people come to a country to further their family's prospects. The receptions they get are very different. And I had read about these things a lot. One of the things I'd studied in my English literature degree was black British writing. And black writers in Britain are different from black writers in America, because the black writers in Britain are mainly from the West Indies, the Caribbean, but with a few from Africa. Not that many.
Not traditionally,
Right, because that's where our empire was. Whereas if you read black American writers, they're often the descendants of slaves. And so there's very different histories there. Having read a lot of those stories, I thought that writing my own would be interesting, because there's a lot of things that I, as an immigrant, have in common with some of those immigrants. Like, you'd find somebody who is a highly qualified technician from Jamaica would come to Britain and they'd have to become a chairmaker. That's like me being a lawyer and then having to be a potato boxer. And it's just one of the things you have to do. You just have to work hard, and eventually you'll get somewhere.
And while we can have a lot of great, wonderful, open-minded, open-hearted people in this country, in this world, I think no matter how great you are, you can't there's certain things you can't get unless you've experienced it. I can empathize with women all I want. I don't know what it's like to be a woman. I don't know what it's like to deal with those that set of issues. As an immigrant, we understand, all of us are the sons and children of immigrants and everything, as sons and daughters of immigrants, but we don't understand always some of the gray area that exists. I think most people can understand coming to a new country, different language, different sets of rules and all these things. But something is as slight as that, David, of I did this here and I come here and I have to start almost all over. I have to earn my credentials again and my bona fides and all this. We don't think about those things very often. We don't, as Americans, we're too caught up in our own daily run to really think about that stuff. I think it's important for that, not only for us, for current immigrants, for the future immigrants coming to this country, but for our own history, and to appreciate our own history, that our relatives, our ancestors went through this. I know that my Italian ancestors went through some of this, that my Jewish relatives went through some of this. It doesn't take a lot of heavy digging to see that. So we all this is a part of all of our history. I think there is a correlation there that you're talking about with other immigrants. We as Americans can find a correlation to that as well. We're going to wrap up right here for now. We'll come back with more with David Farnborough here on Director's Cut. Welcome back to Director's Cut, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate the time from every one of you, and certainly from Mr. David Farnborough joining us. David, we were talking a little writing. I'd like to dive into photography with you now. Two different worlds, but a correlation, like a lot of things we've talked about today. I'm sensing a theme. when it comes to getting behind the camera to take photos, all of us, especially nowadays where we're all walking around with cameras and everything on our phones, I think most people love to take photos. But what made you want to do this on a different level? I don't want to say a professional level, but we could go there for lack of a better word, maybe. A professional level, take it to that degree.
Two words. Digital photography. I had always been interested in photography when I was young, and as a child I did a photography course learning about how to set focal lengths and shutter speeds, etc. In fact, I've recently found a box of slides. It's actually several boxes of slides I took in 1978 of inner city London. And it was, again, it was driven by my curiosity, but also my appreciation for things that are sometimes unappreciated. So at that time, I was 11 years old, and I was going around these, you might think, rather downtrodden streets where people didn't have much money. But occasionally you'd see something wonderful, like someone had painted the bricks in the around their door in colourful colours. And there are things like that that I've found, and also photographs of buildings which at the time were really unappreciated, like Ernst Blofeld's Trellick Tower, which is a brutalist building. It's post-war, and at the time people were saying this is a horrible modern tower block. Now it's a listed building, which means it's protected against its appearance being altered. So even when I was a boy, I loved doing that. The course I was on thankfully provided the materials. But since then, obviously, it's an expensive hobby doing film photography. And I would buy film whenever I could. But you didn't get the instant feedback you get from digital. And coinciding with my move to America in 2008-2009, I started to do digital photography. And the instant feedback made me correct what I was doing, and it made me really finesse my my photography. I decided that I was going to be a writer and photographer. I decided that's what I wanted to be. And I had business cards printed that had my name and writer and photographer. And then after a little while, people started paying me to do it. Mm-hmm. I actually did some full-time work as a portrait photographer for Life Touch.
Wow.
I'd photograph in churches all over Wisconsin and slightly into the neighboring states. And that was great. I learned a lot through doing that.
Right.
I learned how to get the dad of the family to smile, because you traditionally get the Wisconsin family and
Midwesterners,
the mum and the daughters would be standing there with their perfect gleaming teeth, and the dad would be sitting there with his arms folded, thinking about something else,
not wanting to be there. Yes.
Right.
What kind of things do you like to capture, David? I certainly see the professional side of your work. I've seen a lot of it, appreciate and love your eye. But when you're maybe doing things for yourself or creatively, what kind of stuff do you like to capture traditionally?
Well, it's two things. One of them is the appreciation of the unappreciated. And one of my most successful photographs is The Mill at Midnight. It's an image I took in 2015. I went out to photograph the Northern Lights, and I'd heard that they'd be in full flow that evening. And I went out with my camera and set up my tripod and took lots of photographs of the Northern Lights, thought, oh, these will be great. And then when I looked at them, I was very disappointed. Now, actually, when I got them home and looked at them properly on my computer, they weren't that bad. But as I was disappointed, I thought, well, let's see what else I can photograph at midnight. So I drove over to St. Peter and St. Paul's Catholic Church, and I photographed that, because that's very nice when it's lit up at night. And then I looked over at the mill, and the mill was operating in 2015, and it had these people used to say it's smoke, but it's not smoke. It's steam that comes out of those stacks. And I thought, well, I can give this an ethereal look if I use a long exposure. So I experimented with setting the tripod up on different parts of the bank with different times, and one of them was just right. It's an image which I was able to sell to the paper mill themselves. Wow. And recently I sold a print of it to Marshfield Hospital. And I also have it on my Redbubble account, so people can have T-shirts and mugs printed. That photograph has been shared, I think, thousands of times, including by Vince Beagle, talking about his hometown. So this is the paper mill, which I'd always thought is a very interesting subject, but people would sort of sneer as they went past it, saying, oh, that ugly old thing.
Right.
So I would like to do that type of work. Also, I really like birds. I really like birds that just happen to come into my garden, feed at the bird feeders or the bird bath. And it's a very relaxing thing to just sit there with a camera and hope they don't notice you.
Right.
I love your work of animals in general, especially the birds. And I'm such a person, let alone as a writer, a fan of the underappreciated. I love that line. That's a really, I see it in your work. You said it and immediately made sense to me. But one of the things that I enjoy about your photography that I notice, and I don't know if this is intentional or not, but I feel there is a centering. There is a featured point of the photo. While I take it all in, I'm looking at a willow art right now, and I'm a huge fan of willow trees. I love trees, and I'm looking at one of your pieces right now with that, and I feel the tree, it's centered in the middle here. But what I'm also doing here in looking at this is I'm seeing the trunk coming through, and I'm focused on the trunk, while also then I get a chance to it's a whole other picture almost of taking in the branches and the leaves. When you're taking this, when you're eyeing this up, is that a part of what you're doing? Is wanting to feature something or feature everything? Is there any, are you even thinking about that?
Good question. I actually am very interested in traditional art. I love paintings and artists, and not only do I love going around our local galleries, but whenever I'm in a big city, I will always look for the gallery. My degree, my MA is a history of art degree, even though it's film and visual media. And there is an element of art appreciation and photography in there. I know the rules. I know that you're supposed to use the rule of thirds. I know that you're supposed to try and work the Fibonacci spiral into your work. And sometimes I do that, and sometimes something else is instinctive in me that says, no, this actually has to be the center of the photograph, or there's a line here and the line is pointing somewhere and I want that line to be pointing to the thing that's interesting. So a lot of that's instinctive when I take the photograph. Sometimes the instinct takes over in the editing process.
Gotcha.
With digital photography, the editing process is at least as important as the actual capture.
What about current work that you're working on? I was just going to say you're developing, and that's just man, the puns, you know. I didn't mean to do that.
He can't help it.
What are you currently working on?
Well, I'm really not doing anything photographic as work. I'm really just doing it as a hobby now. I've been a full-time realtor for the past 5 years, and that takes up all of my time, really. But I will, like most people, I carry my camera with me wherever I go because it's my cell phone. And I have a really decent cell phone camera. But sometimes I will get out the camera, the proper camera, and think, oh, this demands that I use this. And it'll just be once in a while. So it might be when we're going to see a parade or an event or something. The last fireworks we had, I didn't bring a camera, but I brought a video camera. I thought it would be interesting to do a time lapse of the fireworks, and so I did the fireworks in 30 seconds.
Oh, cool.
Wow. Cool.
So like that. Very nice. That's the sort of thing. Yeah. Right, so I'm also at the moment having fun with AI. And I'm looking at AI modifications of photographs. I think there's a danger of overdoing these. So I try and do limited series of these, like four pieces. And this is just a hobby. It's just for fun. Yeah. I don't expect anyone to, you know, really appreciate them.
I think that is just as important as the professional work that we do or anything, having those creative outlets for fun. My daughter is the one that taught me this. I'm so focused on being great, doing good work and all these things that I look around and, oh God, I'm in my 40s and I'm not enjoying myself. I'm not having fun doing any of this. It's all work to me. My daughter helped me realize that, you know, you got to have some creative fun in there. We're doing this What the Muppet podcast now that I don't know, you know, who's going to listen to it or anything like that. But just in doing this a couple times with her, I feel like a kid again. I feel like, oh, I completely forgot why I wanted to do this in the first place. I love this. I feel alive doing these things. It became a job for so long that it's nice to have those reminders. And sometimes our hobbies are the reminder of the professional of hey, that pro work, you can have some fun doing this too. You can enjoy yourself. And I think it frees us creatively too. It makes us even stronger as artists. We're speaking with David Farnborough. We're going to take a very quick break, come back and have some a good conversation to wrap things up here on Director's Cut. Welcome back to Director's Cut, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. And a big thank you to David Farnborough for being here. As we wrap up this time, David, I wanted to wrap up on your community involvement. I honestly kind of felt like we could have spent the whole hour talking about this because how I first got to know you was seeing you. I saw you at FRM. I saw you at WRCT. I see you at these events. And I hadn't gotten to hear you talk yet. So I didn't know I heard that beautiful voice of yours yet. But I heard people talking about you. Oh, you have to meet David. Oh, have you heard what David did here? You made yourself known in this community right away, in major part because of your genuineness. Nobody questions where you're coming from or why you're helping or why you're here at this event. We know in a short amount of time, this guy's the real deal. He cares about this area, cares about these things. What made you want to take that step to be involved in different things like FRM and taking photos down there or Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater that you know, many of us met through? Why did you want to put your fingerprints into this community and getting your hands in the dirt like that?
Well, I had never really been involved to such an extent in my community in London. And really the reason is that there isn't the same type of community there. We don't have benefits to help people who are ill. We don't have fundraisers because we don't have for humane societies because we don't have humane societies. And when I came here, I was impressed by all these things that were going on. It didn't take me very long to meet some people who are very influential in getting me on board some of these organizations as a volunteer. One of the first people I met when I came here was Kim Nicholas, who's, funnily enough, now one of my colleagues at Coldwell Banker. I met her because she was a photographer and she had a photography exhibition at the Hotel Mead. And I just got talking to her and we found we had a lot in common. And before long, she said, oh, would you like to be in Locals on Stage? And that was a biannual, or was it biennial? It was every 2 years at Wisconsin Rapids and also every other year at Marshfield. It was a fundraiser for ODC. And she knew that I had a background in community theatre in the UK and also I could sing. So I was asked to be in a couple of sketches and that then grew into more. And eventually I was in the men's dance troupe, which was a lot of fun. So at around the same time, I met Phil Hartley, who is a great community member. Both of those people have been my friends almost since the moment I arrived. And Phil was at that time the executive director of the Humane Society. And I was just asked if I could help out. And I helped out with some very basic things like, you know, moving stuff when they moved the Humane Society from Pepper Street to 64th. And also I helped out with some volunteer photography, also, you know, general being on stage for them, things like that. Another person who got me involved was Nick Brazzo. He was actually my divorce attorney, Nick Brazzo Jr. He knew that his wife was very involved with the Betty Boop Festival. And when I discussed with him my love for the movies, he said, well, why don't you get on their committee? So I did. And then the following year, I was elected the co-chairman of that organization with Sue and Jack Wesley. And I was the co-chairman of that for several years. Unfortunately, that particular event didn't continue past the first 3 years, but it's something that a lot of people are interested in bringing back. In most of these cases, I've just been asked if I'll take part in something. Other organizations I've been involved in are the Central Wisconsin Literacy Council, River City Rhapsody, which was our barbershop group. I've been on the city's ADA advisory board, the Macmillan Memorial Library Board. I was there for 6 years. The Friends of Rapids Music Board. I was there for 7 years and six festivals. And I did all the photography and videography for five of those 6 years. I'm currently involved with Central Networking, which is a business networking group. I'm on one of my church's boards, and I'm on the board of the community theatre. So there's been a lot, and there's still a lot going on. All these things are rewards in themselves. So just the act of volunteering is its own reward.
I was thinking about this I was thinking of my nana, my grandmother, the other day, and I was thinking of some of the stories she would tell me of her family when they first came here. And so much of it involved what they didn't call it then, but volunteering, working at a soup kitchen or helping, current immigrants find housing. A lot of the little things that were done in the early days of this country to get us where we are now. And there was this desire almost to do things in the community, to do things with the people. And you flash forward to now, where we see so many immigrant stories of people not just coming here and wanting to have a better life or earn a better paycheck, but wanting to put back into their zip code, putting into the communities that they're living in. Do you think, whether it's subconscious or it's just something that's in us, that we get to a new place and we want to say thank you? Like, in a way, like, give back, put into, show that we appreciate being here, or even just a little bit of it, and a little of earning our place. Whether, not to say that we have to do that, but maybe subconsciously feeling like we got to earn our keep or show why we're here. I don't know if that's how much there is to that, but I know for my Nana, when she would talk about our relatives that came here, it was that for them. Do you think that that's the case still?
That is a very relevant question, and there is a pattern of immigrants volunteering a lot in the communities in which they join, and sometimes it is within their own community of, say, if you have Germans who move to Brazil, funnily enough, there's a lot of Germans there. Mm-hmm. They'll all set up. I'm talking about probably 100 years ago, they would set up associations. They'd set up German associations. And this is something which traditionally immigrants will do. They'll set up clubs for the people of their type. Yeah. Now, I really don't know anybody of my type here.
I know two or three.
I've got a Welsh friend, Robert, and I've met a couple of people from England, but really that's not something that is possible for me to do. Mm. I am very aware that I would not have made it probably in a big city. If I'd have moved to New York, New York City or Chicago, mm-hmm. I would probably have found it very unfriendly. Yeah. And for me, I am very grateful to the people of Wisconsin Rapids because they have shown me a great deal of kindness. And that's really a very undervalued commodity in this world.
Well said,
well
sir.
Said.
I did. We have a last question to ask you, but real quick, David, do you have an American accent you could do? Do you ever play around with it? I got a couple English friends that love doing the American accent, and they do it better than I do.
Well, just listen to me. I'm going to have a go. I'm going to try and do it. You'll probably think it's terrible, but I'm going to have a go anyways.
No, that was awesome. Not bad. Not bad. I love you. Thank you so much, man. That was awesome. That was good. I thought that was good. David, our final question for you is the toughest one possibly. If you could have coffee with any historical figure, who and why?
Alive or dead?
Either or, yeah.
Either or.
Okay. I'd like to have coffee with Bob Dylan, and I would like him to be dead.
I that's a drop mic. I almost don't want to ask a follow-up. I just want to leave it right there.
Okay, then I'll ask it. Why dead? I'm just curious.
It's a joke. I respect Bob Dylan's writing talent enormously. He's an incredible writer. Not so hot on the singing.
Yeah. That's a great answer, David. Thank you.
Not
so
the first
much.
Person to say that either. We've had a few others say Bob Dylan, so that's cool.
That is,
you know,
really
as a Minnesotan, you know, I got to make sure I mention that I'm from Minnesota, which is also the home of Bob Dylan.
Yes, yes.
Robert Zimmerman. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was. He was from Hibbing, wasn't he?
Yes,
yeah.
He was.
Yeah,
yep. He was born in Duluth, though. I got to say that he was born in Duluth, but he lived in Hibbing. Yeah.
Interesting gentleman to pick, I would say, for any reasons whatsoever. But certainly, just given your background, is it the writer in him that makes you would like to have coffee with him? Is it just the person that he is?
Well, I think we've got 3 minutes to go, and I haven't mentioned my wife. So I just want to say how thankful I am to my lovely wife and how lucky I am to have met her and to have got married to her. So, sorry, you wanted to talk about Bob
nope,
Dylan.
That was perfect. That was a very smart and well way to answer that, sir. David, if people want to know more about some of the work that you've done or even reach out to you to do some future work or anything like that, is there a good way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, anyone can email me on farnborough@yahoo.com, or they can find me on Facebook. I'm not that hard to find. And I'm not currently working as a photographer, you know, and a lot of people still think I'm a photographer. Oh, I didn't even mention my radio work, did I? I was an on-air personality for a few years Mix 96.7. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I'm not currently working except as a realtor, but I'd love to talk to people about the arts and about any of these subjects.
And we encourage them to do that. And David, we are going to be bringing you back. You are definitely coming back for a future show. We appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks so much, David, for joining us. We've got a lot more fun guests coming up on Director's Cut. Stay tuned. One that James is literally vibrating to tell you about.
You better turn my mic off.
I'm going to turn it off here so he doesn't say it. We can't do that yet. So thanks, everyone. Have a great week.